This is Mary Cunningham, and it is April 3rd, 2019. I'm interviewing Teresa O'Sullivan in an office in the History Department in Inuai, Galway. The interview is part of the Tuam Home Oral History Project. So, Teresa, as you know, the project is really to record stories of people who have connection with the home in Tuam. So, you were born in the home. As I understand.
Yes.
So maybe if you could pick up your story in whatever way you'd like to tell it.
Okay. Go ahead. I would have been born in the 28th of February 1957. I don't have any recollection of my time in the home, but I was there for approximately 2 years. My mum would have been 16, almost 17, when she got pregnant. Mm-hmm. She had arranged with her family to go to England to have me, and I think there was definitely support from them at the time to go and have her baby in England. She worked as a household lady over in England, and I think her brother was there as well. And from what she has told me is somebody from the Catholic, somebody in her workplace noticed that she was expecting, because she was getting bigger as time went on, and they reported it to the Irish Catholic Guild and Rescue organisation. Mm-hmm. And they came and they insisted that she come back to Tuam to have me. So that's the background from what I know. What my mum has told me herself is that my dad would have been a guy that would have come home on holidays during the summertime from England, and he would have worked in the bog in the summertime, and they got together. I suppose a key piece in this for me would be that she has stated that she was very innocent about sexuality and all that, and I would definitely think so, yes. Mm. One thing she has said about him, that he was a nice person. I never got to meet him myself, but my mom is a beautiful woman and I trust everything that she has said. Mm. The key pieces, I think, for the interview here is that they never got together. I think the plan was that they were to go away to England, the two of them. And all I know is that she was there one day and she was talking about her friend and she hadn't seen him, and he was gone to England. From what I know is that some of his aunts had influenced his decision about going to England. So she, he just wasn't there, do you know?
Yeah.
So then she went into the home herself. I'm just jumping ahead a small bit there.
Fine,
now I met her in 1990, and I suppose the key pieces really was that when I met her, I just didn't want to wear a fancy dress. I wanted didn't want a posh dress. I wanted to know. That's what I asked the social worker straight away, what had she on her?
Mm-hmm.
Because my thinking is that I had got on well in life and I didn't want her to feel in any way guilty or upset or felt that she hadn't done the right thing or a good thing, because she was a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Mm.
Where it gets complicated, I think, is two things. The reason I don't have a huge amount of information on my time in Tuam was because whenever the conversation came up, you'd see the faraway look in her eyes and you'd see the sadness. And I always stopped out of respect for her, but I knew there was something.
Mm-hmm.
And we never sat down fully and got the full story of her time there, only snippets of it. I suppose for here today is that she spent a year in the home. There was two major things. Is that she said that there was an occasion where there was some kind of bullying going on, and she got the blame.
Mm-hmm.
And again, she was a lovely, quiet woman, but she did say on one occasion that she was severely beaten as of a situation that had happened. She told me this when she was actually dying herself. So she was on her deathbed when she said it, and it was her and me.
Hmm.
I didn't go into it, but I know that it had happened. Going back to, she spent a year there, and again, that would have been the norm at the time. There would have been, her family would have, I assume, given some money every month, because you were supposed to at that time if you had your daughter and their baby in the facility. Two major things she said was, whenever she got her meals and that should be on ordinary plates, and we got ours in a saucer, and sometimes we might have got bread, butter and jam, but she didn't. She never said a huge amount about it, but one of the most painful things for her was the day that she had to leave. And when she came in, I was in, I think she said a playpen, but every time she'd come, I'd always put my hands up when she'd be coming with excitement when she'd come.
Mm.
And I was over a year at that time. But this day, I kind of looked up as if I kind of knew it was her last day, that there was some kind of a connection.
Mm.
I wasn't able to name it, but there was something. So she had to go. Again, the records are badly written, and there are certainly some questions in it. There's a lot of black marks in it, there's a lot of stuff that's covered over in that. Did she give me up willingly? I don't think so.
Mm.
I do know that my picture had been taken for the market in America, and I'm saying market because that's exactly what it was. Any baby in Tuam that was going for the American market, your photograph was taken.
Yeah. Or was it a particular
it
style
was,
of picture?
They would dress you up on the day.
Yes.
Yeah, and it would be for American couples to see us and to come over and to take us over there.
Yeah.
You're
beautifully dressed with the little crocheted
slippers. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah. I suppose one of the things at this point, in case I do forget to say it, is when I met the other Tuam Home survivors in the last number of years, sometimes I put away my photograph because I looked well looked after there. But there's two things in that photograph. There's also scabs and that down the side of my hand here. There was also impetigo, and there was also very severe chronic abscesses as well in my ears, and as a result of all of that, I have a hearing disability today, in which I wear hearing aids all the time. There would have been no medical intervention at the time when I was inside in the home that time, and there was no antibiotics. So even though it might look okay, that wasn't the way of it underneath.
And was your hearing issue, was that established as a child? That
it was
from
only
when you
established,
were a baby?
It was only established, actually, that when my mom had to go to England that time, she came back after so many months, and she was going to take me out. But when she went there, the nun said that she had messed up her own life and that she wasn't going to get an opportunity to mess up mine. So they said that I was on my way to America and that she needs to go back and get on with her life. But what actually was, I wasn't on my way to America at all. On the 20th of October, I think 1958, I was transferred from Tuam to St. Patrick's Orphanage in Cork. And when I got there, I was hospitalised for 6 weeks, I think, in St. Finbarr's Hospital in Cork. And again, that would have been due to the ears and due to the impetigo as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most important thing in the records would be that there was no medical records at all transferred from, according to the records here, no records from the Tuam home.
And do you know why it was to Cork you went when there was hospitals closer,
I don't know, but I assume it would have been that my adopted mammy and daddy, who were absolutely beautiful, had applied for adoption.
or? Okay.
And I assume that they would have connected, because there is a letter in the files that is written to them saying that a baby has come in to the Sacred Heart Adoption Society in Cork, and that the baby was only staying for a couple of days. And if they wanted to make contact, that they were to make contact immediately. And it was the old phones that time, and they were to make contact between 1 and 6. So I would assume that that's how I ended up in Cork. It may have been a situation as well, is because of the hearing loss as well. If I was to go to America on planes or something, I wasn't a well baby. Nutritionally, it didn't look too bad looking at the photographs, but definitely the ears would have been a major factor, because when I went into Cork to the hospitals, the consultants and that would have said there was chronic abscess. And I suppose I feel for that little baby now, the pain
The
that must have been
pain.
there, in the effect of
Well,
that.
it must have been, because to establish a hearing loss in a child under a year,
Yes.
it would be unusual to know,
Yes. Yes.
unless, of course, were they doing the kind of public health examinations that were
I
probably
don't
not.
know. I don't
So, I
know.
mean, the ears must have been presenting quite a problem.
I would think so. I would think so. And they would have said, all right, when I got to Cork as well, that when they went to take a photograph, that I would cry quite a lot, and that I was a baby, that it was very difficult for them to stop me from crying. And again, that's in the records. There's an observation that was made as well. I went on then to, I'm just trying to think there now. I went to my adopted mammy and daddy, who were absolutely lovely, but I have to say they were very sharp. They weren't academic people, but they were just so with it, you know, that they rang the Sacred Heart Society. And they said, you're after giving us a little girl. You never told us about the hearing infections or anything like that. But they stuck with it, you know, and they were there 100% for me. I couldn't say it enough. But they, you know, they challenged the system at the time, and they had papers to finally sign, and they wanted to make sure that I was okay and that I was safe, and then they signed them. There would have been a situation where there was conflict between, when I was in the hospital in Cork in St. Finbarr's, I think it was the Cork County Council felt that they shouldn't pay for me while I was there, that it should have been Galway County Council should have been paying. So there was debate going back and forth. There was even a stage where I was going to be sent back to Tuam again, because nobody would pay for me in the hospital.
And just to, how did your adoptive parents make contact with Tuam?
They had no contact with Tuam. They never knew about Tuam.
Okay,
No,
so.
they had made contact, I think, to the Sacred Heart Adoption Society in Cork, looking for a little baby.
Okay.
And my sense is that obviously the Sacred Heart team would have been in contact with Tuam, I'd say. I'm only guessing
No,
this now.
yes, yeah, no, I'm just
And
wondering,
then
yeah.
I would have been sent to Cork for adoption.
I
Yeah,
see, yes.
that's how that.
And then once you got to Cork, you were hospitalised for
Oh,
your issues,
yes,
your health issues.
yeah. And there was no final signing of adoption papers of any kind until 1959, because of the fact that I was unwell as well. And they even said at one stage that my adopted parents were very lucky and very privileged that they didn't have to pay for me inside the hospital. But that they don't normally do that. And that what they were afraid of, from what I can see reading in the records, was that the Galway County Council and the Cork County Council did, if my bill went on for my hearing and my unwellness, they were not prepared to pay, because they didn't know how long it was going to go on for.
Yes, yeah.
So there was debate kind of around that as well.
Yeah.
But my mum and dad that I was adopted to couldn't speak high enough of them. They were absolutely beautiful. Unfortunately, my mum passed away a few years after that.
Oh.
I went to them when I was up 2, and then my mum got very unwell from my old age of 7, and she would have passed away when I was 12. So there was just me and my daddy then, mm-hmm. from there on.
Yeah.
You know, and I adored. And mm-hmm. he adored me as well, and that's kind of the way of it.
Yes.
They did not have any background at all on to what went on. They never heard of Tomb. They never heard of anything.
Yeah.
And you just see in the records where they would have given a donation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the donation was. That's how much history
mm.
that they kind of had.
Mm.
They had nothing before.
And did they make you aware as a child that you were adopted? Did you always know?
Before I ever went to school,
yeah.
They were saying that I was very special and that I was picked among many and that everybody else had to take what they get. But they picked me.
Yes. Yeah.
And they would have said lovely things, like the day that they went in to get me as well, that I was running around the room very, very quickly, and that my adopted daddy then had a small little piece of chocolate in his hand, and I was keeping an eye on the chocolate the whole time, and I was about a year and a half that time, and it was almost as if I didn't trust him, but I was still keeping an eye on the chocolate. So I did take a piece, you
mm.
know, but again, I don't have an awful lot more kind of history on that
mm-hmm.
until I got married, had a two lovely children. Then I went on to have a little baby, Rebecca, and she was stillborn. And I brought her picture here today as well, because I think what I'd like to submit for the archives, to me, that's very important, is my own story and the lifeline of having my own children as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lad of 31, and I have a lovely girl of 28,
mm-hmm.
and little Rebecca would have been born as well, but it would have been a stillbirth. So I just brought the three of them with me
mm-hmm.
today.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
just say that. Clearly, you met your biological mother, your mother.
Yes.
So can you just talk to me about that?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
you found
yeah.
her and
yeah.
when you decided you wanted
yeah.
to meet her.
After having my first baby, I suppose, one of the important things, I suppose, again, is going back to medical records, is that I was absolutely terrified having my first little baby, because I just had no history of anything and I just did not know what was going to happen. So I found that difficult. I really did find that difficult. But he was absolutely gorgeous when
mm-hmm.
it came, and so was my daughter. But again, you had no medical background when I was going in myself as well, and I did have difficulty in the births as well. I started looking for my mum after my first baby was born, so I started in about 1988. I followed up with professionals inside the Sacred Heart Society in Cork with a social worker. The first time I went, they said that there was no records whatsoever, and I kept pursuing it, and then they came back with say my mother was 19, which would have been incorrect, that she was from the west of Ireland, and there was no further details. I went back again, and so I kept pursuing it and kept meeting with them and saying, well, look, there must be someone out there. There might be an aunt or an uncle or someone. Keep looking. So eventually I got a phone call, and they had found her in London.
Sorry, just to interrupt, is that the same society now? They were still in existence?
Yes, they were.
Yeah, okay.
Now, whether they were under a different name or not, I don't know, but
it was the same,
where I started. Anyway.
Same organisation.
Yeah,
anyway.
It was in
the
Paul
Sacred
Street
Heart,
in Cork. I think it was the Sacred Heart Society, but
mm.
it was in Paul Street in Cork anyway,
yeah,
that
okay.
they had
yeah.
their office when I went back in 1988. Whether they were fully under that term and title, I'm not sure,
yeah.
but I started there.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
yeah.
So they made contact with her, and I met her in the Social Service Centre in Limerick.
Mm.
The 2 points there, I think, was that they had arranged, found that I was there, what they had said was, there's somebody from the 1950s wishing to meet you. And they didn't say who, but she immediately made the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And just to say there, she had been a very, very religious woman, and she would have prayed for a long, long time that something like this would happen. She also would think of me every year on my birthday, the 28th of February. So I think there are two key pieces, really, that she never forgot me at all.
Mm.
When I was arranged to meet her, again, some of my own family said that they'd come down and come with me and all that. But I just felt that it was a journey I wanted to do myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down to meet herself and her husband with the social worker. And it was fabulous. I didn't see her for a couple of minutes because she hugged me so much I couldn't see the woman. And she was beautiful. She was absolutely beautiful. I have a photograph here
mm-hmm.
of her. Very pretty woman. That's me and her there. Yes.
Oh my
That's
goodness,
her.
Yeah, yeah. She's very, yeah.
Yeah, and there was, I suppose there's two
beautiful
things.
Smile.
Beautiful
smile. Beautiful
yeah.
smile, yeah.
And two things about the photograph as well. She was just in her about 54 there, but I was pregnant at the time with my little daughter, and I was 5 months pregnant, and I was extremely conscious that I didn't want to meet her while I was pregnant in case that it would bring up something for
mm-hmm.
her, so I kept hiding it a little bit, but then I told her, you know, so we had a lovely evening, we really
mm-hmm.
didn't ask too many questions about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just the fact that she was there
mm-hmm.
and she was a beautiful woman, you know, so we had 15 years of contact over and back. She had gone on to have 4 boys and a girl, and one of the boys had passed away just about a year after I meeting them, and I still have contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I suppose, was looking back at it now, I'm sorry I didn't ask more questions.
Yeah.
But the one thing I did ask was about the dead.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get to meet him, but we did try and see if we could, you know, meet him. And she did make contact with him, but there was something blocking really, because he didn't want his wife to know that I existed. So what he said was to send a letter of confirmation of where we were going to meet, him, me and my mom, and he would come. But what happened was, he said he'd not to send the letter home, to send it to a local bed and breakfast and he'd pick it up there. And what happened, this was about 2000, I'd say.
Mm.
And what happened was, we think, is that the lady in the bed and breakfast must have given it to his wife. And then all of a sudden we got a letter back saying that if we pursued any more, that they'd take us to court.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was a very poignant time, actually, because my mum panicked because she didn't want to have any unrest in his family. I didn't want to have any unrest for her, so we all stopped, and we missed the opportunity.
Mm.
I don't know any more than that until he passed away. I suppose there was 2 points really in 2000, I think it's 2008, that I went to the local parish priest where he was living, because I knew where he was living because my mom had told me. And I said, could they set up a confidential meeting between me and my father? They said they'd look into it. But then I was to come back up for an appointment the following week, which I did. And I mean disrespectfully, but the priest never turned up. And it was such an important occasion for me as well. But at the same time, wasn't my dad being buried that week in the same parish? So it missed, you know, it just wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did then was I knew he had a son, so I pursued looking for him, and he had been living in London, and then he was living in Galway, but he had gone back to London in the meantime. But it took me a little while, but we have made contact, and I did find him, and I did pursue it.
Hmm.
So, you know,
yeah.
Through him, I
mm-hmm.
have, you know, memories, I suppose, new memories to kind of do.
And
know.
Some photographs and
yeah.
whatever,
and
which
I
is important as well.
Yeah,
yeah,
I suppose one of the things, I suppose, that I feel about the dead is that his own mum would have had him when she was 17. And she gave him to a neighbour down the road. No, I would say probably not willingly. Family probably intervened and said this is what she has to do.
Mm.
And so she went to America, and he was reared with a different family.
Oh, so
yeah. So years on, when he was 64, he found her in a nursing home in America.
Mm.
And I have a photograph here, and it is a one-off shot that one of the healthcare assistants took, and that's their actual meeting.
And she's laughing so much, yeah.
That was her first time seeing him in over 60 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And she passed away 3 weeks after that.
But she was aware of him and the
She
whole
didn't
thing,
know
yeah.
who he was when he came in first,
yeah.
Like, but she just, you can see by the photograph,
yes, yes,
it's just
lovely.
So alive.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful
yeah.
picture.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's a fabulous shot. And
yeah.
she didn't know he was coming or anything like that. I suppose there is part of me saying the fact that he had experienced, I'd say the word illegitimacy, but I hate to use it.
Yeah.
I thought he might pursue it more when it came to me. But
mm-hmm.
we don't know the reasons.
Yeah.
Why.
Yeah, you were just saying, just
yeah.
when you were talking about the initial thing, about when your mother was pregnant and that she thought she'd go away with him.
Yes.
And then he was coming back from England, was it for summertime? Is that what you were saying?
I think
yeah.
it looks like as if it was for summertime. And I think one of the things was when I was born, she did send letters out to him because I think she knew where he lived in England, but he never got the letters. I think they were intercepted and stopped because when she met him 40 years on, when I started looking for him, I think there was something there that they would have talked about it or something, but it looks as if he never got the letters.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't ever judge him because I don't know if he wanted to meet me or circumstances stopped him. I actually
yes.
don't know,
yeah.
to be honest.
Yeah. And just that you feel that you think that maybe he was put under pressure to leave the
oh,
time.
I would think so. I would think so, yeah. I think it's very much going with the history of the time and what, you know, the records that we have and what people are saying of that different time, that the minute they found out they had to go or the women had to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I
but
don't
sometimes
know.
There used to be pressure, I think, put on the couple to marry though and to
oh, absolutely.
Regularize the
absolutely.
So that doesn't seem to have been the situation in that.
No, and she
yeah.
would have been very young as well.
Yeah. And was he around the same age?
He
or?
Was 24.
Oh,
he was 24.
A bit older,
yeah. And I suppose I could go down that road too and do the asking and the why and what happened and that.
Mm.
I never did much with her because I knew that she'd be upset about it. Her own family have kind of mixed reviews on it, I suppose, in the sense of they used to go in to see into the home in Shum about every month. And to see us when I was there as well with her.
Her parents?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think she had problems when she was having me as well, so she was transferred to the Galway Hospital. And from what I can know is that they came in there to see me as well. I don't know much more than that now,
mm.
you know, except that she was, I couldn't emphasize enough that she was a beautiful person.
Mm.
You know.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And she went away to England after?
She went to England
yeah.
then and she met her husband a year and a half after, and she would have told me that the second night that she went out with him, she said to him, look, I've had a little baby.
Mm.
So she said it from day one, which I think was the right thing
yes,
to do.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing that I suppose, when I met her, she flew from London with her husband and she met me in Limerick, but she didn't tell her family for quite some time after that because she was afraid that they would think ill of her. So she kept our meeting quiet for a long time. That kind of bothered me, I suppose, a little bit because, after doing so much looking, but yet I could see where she was coming from too. She finally did say it to them. And one of her sons would have said, ma'am, is that all? You had a baby.
Mm.
And it was the most beautiful way that they welcomed me as well. The one thing she did do, though, was our husband had relations who would have been in the nuns and all that at the time. But for quite some time, I was always put down as a cousin.
Yes.
And that in itself was kind of difficult when it came to family gatherings because I also looked like them. But I went along with it for about 2.5 years after that again.
Mm.
And this is our cousin from Ireland. So that, you know, can hit too when you know, well, actually I'm a little bit more than that, I'm your daughter,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I can see where she would have been wondering what the religious might have thought of. Because she felt so guilty, and she spent more time in the church than anyone I know. Again, would have been the situation at the time where they would have felt they would have sinned, and she took everything exactly as the church had said it.
Yes.
You know, she deserved, though, to have it right, you know, when we met in that, and there was never anything. And there's one thing, actually, we had a baby photograph. I had that photograph. She had the photograph. And her father had the photograph of me, obviously taken from the home, in his top suit pocket for well over 30 years. And before his wife, which would be my original grandmother, would have passed away when she was 93, she would have said, 3 weeks before she died, do we ever find that little girl? And they said that, yes, that my mother had met me. And she said, oh, thank God. She said, we can die happy now.
So that your mother had never told her parents that she, yeah.
No, she told them. She did tell them, but I think the grandmother died the week that I met her.
Oh,
she
so she was that close. Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah, I think it was a week or two
or something like that.
Just, again, they're important.
So the grandparents were, they obviously were accepting of you as well, though, would they? You know, at the beginning, we go back again now to the circumstances.
I think to be the community influence, because she would have said that time, she said that the priest had come down, I think, and the priest had a massive say on what they were going to do when my mother was expecting at that time. Yeah, the priest was a huge, strong influence at the time. They would have said that, this is what you do.
Yeah.
And they went by that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Which is a story that you hear from other people.
Absolutely.
Also.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, okay. Do you want to take a break?
Yeah.
Go again. So, you were saying there just about the issue of not having medical records and the whole looking for your birth mother.
Yes. I think that is extremely important, because when I went to have my own little babies, I had birth difficulties as well. And if I had had my history, I would have known that my mom would have had difficulties having me during the birth as well. And she was transferred from the home into the Galway Hospital, and then we came back out after 9 days. So that's why I think that medical records are so important. Another thing as well is that I haven't taken a DNA test. And when I met my brother for the first time from my dad's side in London, we just automatically clicked, and I never took a DNA test. I just trusted that it was it, and when my mother said she was my mom, I trusted that that was it, and it was, and I know it is true. There is absolutely no doubt in the world about it. However, though, I would be saying that it's something that I would still like to take, you know, because I think it's important as well for my own children as well, and for myself as well, and to put it in my records, in the archives, that everything that I can possibly do will be done. Another thing that I wanted to say as well is about my birth certs. It's just one particular difficulty that when I was seven, when I was making my communion, and I can still remember it, I remember my mom and dad having to go into the school to fight for me to make my communion, because my birth cert was not accurately reflected. I don't know exactly now, but I have a copy of it here, actually, and I can just see that this is the birth cert that I was used for a long, long time, and it was just a number. It was my name and a number.
Yeah, okay.
And it is only in recent years that I got a birth cert, a long birth cert, and it would be my adopted mammy and daddy would be written in the birth cert. So I think what I intend to pursue is that everybody should be on my birth cert. That they should be, my natural mum and dad should be on it. And they should be a next section where, when as I adopted, should be on the birth cert, and it should be reflected accurately for the identity of who I am. And that is a respect for them all.
So there was no long birth cert
no.
drawn up when you were born?
No, No, I never remember seeing anything.
Yeah.
The only thing I had was a blue piece of paper saying that I was baptized on the 5th of March. There was no witnesses on it. There's nothing like that. So there's a lot in the records that needs to be looked at, updated, and regulated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were saying there about the records, about some letters, that there was some information is taken out of them or
oh, yes.
redacted.
Yes,
in some way.
I would see that the records, that and I know out of the privacy of the names and that they would be blacked out. They would be, they'd be very scantily written.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be only bits and pieces. I'd also query some of the signatures of consent that would have been given as well. And
yeah.
just pointing out to one there, we'll say,
yes,
the signature, you know.
Yeah.
To me, it looks as if somebody else wrote it.
That, yes.
You know, that the consent of...
And that's on the adoption,
adoption
form.
Papers,
and you feel that it wasn't signed by your mother.
I would question.
You'd question it,
I would
it,
question
yeah.
it. I would, yeah. I would,
yeah.
yeah. And there's also information there as well where it would have said that she would have read the contents and torn off part of I have read these contents and torn off and kept a copy or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah. No.
Can I go back on that?
Sorry. Yeah, that's fine.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Go on.
It just that the records have a query over them. There's no doubt about that. They
yeah.
need to be looked at and scrutinised properly. That everything was in order at the time. I actually have it here, actually. I, the mother, then it's blacked out,
mm-hmm.
of the child, have received from you a statement explaining the effects of an adoption order. That statement was attached to this receipt, and I have myself torn it off. I understand that statement.
But
I think there's a lot of query.
But we can't see what the statement actually. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the comprehension of it, who wrote it. There isn't a signature there. There's a printed version of it there. And again, there would be a lot of blackouts
mm.
there.
And there's also three different writing.
Yes.
Three different writing hands I see there.
Yes.
Written
yeah,
on it.
Yeah.
yeah.
So there's a lot of query.
There is. Yeah. yeah.
Over that on how my mum would have agreed or not agreed. Are forced into it, or again, it's for debate. It's for debate.
Yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, yeah. But you never really spoke about all of that with your mother.
I didn't, because when I'd see her getting upset about it, I did not want to go back into it. I suppose one of the other things as well is roughly, kind of middle of 2000, I'd say. I would have known a nun, just an acquaintance, a colleague, and she put me in touch with a nun who had spent some time working in the Chum home. And I agreed to meet with her, and I met her in Ballinasloe, but I only met her for a couple of minutes because she didn't stay long at all. It was very, very quick. And she had said that the home had been burned down, and that all the records were gone, but there might be one or two things in Merlin Park with the Galway County Council. So I always believed that my ears might have been due to the home burning down. And then I thought that what was in vitiligo was probably scabs or something from the burning. To discover when I went to Merlin Park, and there was a huge big manuscript there, and I could see my name, Teresa Bourne of House Servant, just the one line, and there was hundreds of babies on the manuscript, but they were all blocked. They just showed me the one line of myself. And I always thought that it had been because of a fire. And it's only in the latter years when I've actually met people from Chum and joined the network, and everything that has come out about the little babies in the septic tanks, I am now finding a history that I did not know. And I would honestly say that trauma comes in again, because you're actually hearing something for the first time, even though you'll be 60 years on. You know, so what I'd be really saying is the records are not accurate. Stories were said that were not true as well.
And can you explain why you'd be down Teresa, born of a house servant? Why would that be used to describe?
I don't know.
Your mother,
that.
Yeah.
I'd say it was because when she was working in England after she going over, I think she went to England when she was 17, she may have been working in a household capacity over there. I'm not sure, to be honest. But it was house servant.
Yeah.
I actually have the piece of paper, one line.
Because she must have gone from home.
She could have.
When
she could have.
Like
yeah.
when she fell pregnant, she was living with her parents, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And
yeah.
was she just
yeah.
at, was she working at anything at that time? Do you
well,
know?
She was quite young.
I know, at
yeah.
17, she
yeah.
possibly wasn't.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think what happened is her brother was working in England, and I think they arranged for her to go working over there. But I don't have all the history of that, to be honest about it. No, her brothers and that are still alive as well, but they'll be in their 80s. So I do get a little bit of information kind of every so often when I'd meet with them. But I've noticed that they don't go into it too much. Maybe they were just afraid to as well, especially with all the publicity and everything that's there at the moment, I think. There would be reservation and I don't push it that much, but at the same time though, the more I hear, the more I want to know about my own history as well, and I want to be able to pass it on to my own son and daughter as well. And I suppose for the interview here as well, I couldn't speak highly enough of the support that I've got from my own son and daughter, from my friends, from my family, and that's very important as well for me to have that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I think we've covered a lot, Teresa. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to, just I suppose in terms of the project, what you'd hope might come out of having, you know, recording these histories? Have you any kind of feelings about that?
I do. I think it's an education for everybody, and I also think the most prominent thing, I suppose, is that history doesn't repeat itself. I have fierce admiration for the youth of today, because I think they're far more accepting, and a baby is never a mistake. I think that's the most important line as far as I'm concerned. I think identity of who we are, it is so important, and I really think that what the university is doing is absolutely outstanding, and I have said this already, because I just feel it puts us, it lifts us as well. You know, I think it does. It validates our existence, and I think that is the most important thing. And to have it in the archives, it's a privilege, to be honest. And also, I think out of something bad comes something good. You know, and to be part of that, you know, that things are turning. And it is so, so important that it's there for people to read, and in years to come, that it's there. And it's our story, and that's why it is so important.
Okay. Right, thanks very much, Teresa.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, there's just a few more things, Teresa, I think, that you wanted to add before we finally finished.
Yeah. I just wanted to add that even though somebody is adopted, which is, you know, works out well for quite a lot of number of people, and there's also a situation where it mightn't work out as well, and I understand that too. But for my own personal story, I know that for me that rejection and abandonment was very, very much in the fore of how I felt myself as well. And I had a wonderful adopted mammy and daddy, and certainly would acknowledge that. But I also want to know that I would have spent 5 to 6 years in counselling in my early 30s, and it would be all from adoption, abandonment, rejection. And it took me a long time to work through that. And I think the feeling of always feeling not good enough, nearly there, and not quite. I think it's very important to say that you would feel a second-class citizen, even though I did well. I did well academically, and I did well in my job and all of that. But there is that innate that you feel that sense of that. So it took me a long time to work through that. And even every so often now, I would feel it, you know, that I wouldn't be good enough. And I think that definitely stems from early childhood development trauma. And it is very important to say this at that interview as well.
Okay. Right. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.